Along the way. On my pillow, that won't dry on their own. Beyond my ears, I've no sorrow, but today I don't walk alone.
Hey, Spencer, alcoholic joke teller.
Spencer.
And this is from a rabbit walks into a bar. Best jokes and cartoons from A.A. Grapevine. The following tale was said to be one of Bill W.'s favorites. The man is living alone on a desert island. And finally, a ship comes to rescue him. The captain notices a lot of buildings around the island, so the loner takes him on a tour. After walking a while, they come to a building with a sign out front that says AA. "Yes, indeed, I'm a member," the loner says proudly. A little later on, they walk past another building, and one has the same AA sign. The ship's captain is curious and asks for the reason. The loner shrugs and said, "Oh, that's the meeting I won't go to."
All right. Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group. Prepare for our Big Book Study. Let's get focused by having a 3-minute meditation followed by the following prayer.
Good evening, everyone. I'm a recovered alcoholic, and my name is Jay.
I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Ryan.
Hey, Ryan. Thank you for joining us tonight. We're going to start the meditation in a minute, so please take a moment to get situated.
Please turn off all devices and noise that will distract others for the duration of the meeting.
The coffee area will be open for this portion of the meeting. Just try to minimize the distractions.
Also, please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down.
For the meditation, some suggestions are focus on your breath and posture, breathe in God, and breathe out self.
Take this time to get reconnected to God, let the craziness of the day drift away, and ask God to help you focus on the study. So we're going to go ahead and put the headstand on and bring them on stage.
Thank you.
Prayer. If you don't know it, there's cards on the table. You can just follow along. God,
let your love shine through me
like a fog light, so those who are lost, sick, and dying can find your love through me.
Amen. And now we're going to have Don come up and do our secretary's report. Let's welcome up Don.
Don.
Good evening, guys. Hey. My name is Don, and I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the, hey, Jay. In keeping with the seven tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining those outside contributions, baskets are going around now. Now I've asked Tatiana to read the recovered statement. Now we read this statement to explain why many people in this group identified as recovered rather than recovering and what it exactly means to be recovered. Would you please?
Right there,
that's it. All right. Wow. I'm Tatiana, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Tatiana.
We are not cured of alcoholism, recovered, but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we are cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to the alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in the body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
Good job, thanks. Alrighty, the 1940 style Big Book sponsorship from forward to the second edition of Alcoholics Anonymous of Alcoholics, who came to AA and really tried. 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses. And among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experience is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. Now, the statistics above suggest a 75% success rate, which is not too shabby. Now, in the back, we have CDs, we have mugs, we have large print big books, we have little red books, and the big book dictionaries for sale. Now, we meet here every Monday promptly at 7:15. We ask that you be courteous and ready to rock and roll at the Road to Recovery tune. Enjoy the meeting, guys.
All right, Don.
Thanks, Don. From the forward to the first edition of Alcoholics Anonymous, we have Alcoholics Anonymous for more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book and of this group.
From There is a Solution, also from the Big Book, the tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out in which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism.
This is an open meeting, and as such, all who have an interest in alcoholism and our program of recovery are welcome. Because this is an open meeting, you need not identify yourself nor your reason for being here if you do not wish to do so. Your anonymity will be protected. We ask that you protect ours.
Can we have a show of hands of the people joining us for the first time? All right, we can start over here. Hey, Zach.
Hey, welcome. Zach, welcome.
Thomas, welcome. Hi.
I'm Jack, an alcoholic, first time at this meeting.
Hello, welcome.
Welcome.
Tatiana, still an alcoholic, first time at this meeting.
Welcome, Tatiana.
And this whole table?
Maddie,
hi, Maddie, welcome.
Welcome.
Ian, welcome.
Welcome.
Hi, welcome.
Welcome.
Hello, welcome. Hi, welcome. Hello, welcome.
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 Alex, welcome.
Welcome. Hey, all right, Drew, welcome. Hello, welcome. Hey, welcome, Ashley, welcome. All right. Well, you?
No, I was kind
of... Oh, show of hands of recovered alcoholics.
That. While this is an open meeting, membership of this group is limited to those who wish to recover from alcoholism and have a desire to stop drinking for good and all. Each member of Alcoholics Anonymous is a potential sponsor of a new member and should clearly recognize the obligations and duties of such a responsibility.
All right, and if anybody needs a big book for our big book study, we have loaners, and they're at the edge of the tables. If you need one, you can grab one.
Before we begin our study of the big book, last week we reviewed Tradition 7. Tonight we're going to take a quick review of Tradition 8. So please refer to the unabridged big book, page 562, and the abridged big book, page 177. We have John coming up. He'll do the short form and the long form and then talk about his experience with Tradition 8.
My name is John, recovered alcoholic.
Hey, John.
Welcome.
And the steps or how it works and the traditions is why this whole thing stays together. And there's groups like this going on across country, and it's amazed that these things are still going on. The traditions is why it's going on. So we're on the eighth tradition tonight. Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. That's the short form, and the long form is... Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional. We define professionalism as the occupation of counseling alcoholics for fees, for money, or for hire. But we may employ alcoholics where they're going to perform those services for which we might otherwise have to engage non-alcoholics. Such as special services may be well compensated. Thank you, Mike. But our usual AA 12-step work is never to be paid for. What that means, and let me just read a little bit more. Spiritual as it is, AA remains very much of this world. The eighth tradition, like the seventh, focuses on the vulgar five-letter word that actually isn't mentioned in either, money. Many of us had to explain to some cynical prospect, no, I'm not a social worker. I don't get paid for talking to you. I'm doing it because it's the best way I can stay sober myself. In other words, me spending time with you ensures my sobriety as well as it helps you. We do this for free. Now, I have heard of people doing this for fee, sober support, sober escorts, and so on. And so I've heard it all because I'm sober many, many years. Like Mike and many other us too. But for me, myself, and for my sponsor and my sponsorship family, we would never accept fees for helping or working with another alcoholic. We get to do this. It's my pleasure to do this. I do this to ensure my own sobriety. And that's what the eighth tradition is about. And that's why keeping these traditions in force and in effect is the best way to keep Alcoholics Anonymous going for ages and ages and ages, and that's why it's maintained itself for the last 100 years or so, or almost 100 years. Thank you.
Thanks, John.
All right. Thank you, John. In order to help us stay focused as we study the Big Book, we use the Big Book study guide prepared by Joe and Charlie and Krusty Cliff, the Dallas Primary Purpose Group.
Tonight, we're going to begin on page 33, which will be read from the front by tonight's reader, Shelby. Come on.
After the page is read, we're going to ask questions from the podium, starting back at the top of page 33. The answers will be one sentence unless otherwise specified, and multi-part questions are simply a one-sentence answer split up by commas, semicolons, hyphens, and other fun bits of punctuation.
Basically, in English, what that means is that we're going to read the material once through and then redissect the information a second time through the question and answer format. Notice how the language in the questions gives us a new light in which to consider the study material.
This is important because hearing the question and rereading the content offers a definite way of comprehending the material covered. After we've completed the page, we open up for comments, questions, and observations based on what was just read. If you have spiritual experiences with this information, you're free to share.
However, Big Book study is not therapy. Should you begin sharing about topics which are more appropriately discussed in a different IE sponsorship setting, Please do not be offended when we cut that conversation short. For that purpose, we have fellowship meetings before and after our study time.
You can never go wrong by commenting on the page, which brings us to the words of one of the co-founders of Alcoholics Anonymous. Sobriety, freedom from alcohol through the teaching and practice of the 12 steps is the sole purpose of any Alcoholics Anonymous group. So we didn't just start on page 33 tonight. We've been reading for a bunch of weeks. We started way back in the beginning of the book and the preface and the forewords. We talked about what Alcoholics Anonymous is and how it became what it is today. It's kind of important if you're about to join an organization for the rest of your life that you learn a little bit of history about that organization. Then we jumped into the doctor's opinion where we got to learn about what alcoholism is. We learned that it's a threefold disease. It's a spiritual malady, it's a physical allergy, and it's a mental obsession. Dr. Silkworth really goes into a lot of detail talking about the physical allergy aspect of alcoholism. So now that we know what alcoholism is, we get to see what alcoholism looks like in Bill's story. We might not relate to everything in Bill's story. A lot of us didn't work on Wall Street. A lot of us didn't go to war. But when it comes to the hopelessness of his disease and that progression, that we can absolutely relate to. So it's another chance for us to kind of qualify ourselves on whether or not we think we're alcoholic. Once we've learned what alcoholism is and we've seen what it looks like, now it's time to start talking about a solution. So we jump into a chapter called There is a Solution. Spoiler alert, the solution is God. We also learn a little bit about the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and how important it is, but how that in itself won't keep us sober. We need to have a spiritual experience or a spiritual awakening as a result of going through the steps. And that brings us to where we are tonight, which is more about alcoholism, otherwise known as the chapter on relapse. This chapter is going to talk about those weird little mental twists that happen before a person relapses. So last week we started talking about the story of the man of 30. We're going to pick up at the beginning of that story just to tee us up a little bit. So if you want to start on page 32, right in the middle.
Man of 30?
Yep.
Okay. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Shelby.
Hi, Shelby.
Hey, Shelby.
A man of 30 was doing a great deal of spree drinking. He was very nervous in the morning after these bouts and quieted himself with more liquor. He was ambitious to succeed in business, but saw that he would get nowhere if he drank at all. Once he started, he had no control whatever. He made up his mind that until he had been successful in business and had retired, he would not touch another drop. An exceptional man, he remained bone dry for 25 years and retired at the age of 55, after a successful and happy business career. Then he fell victim to a belief which practically every alcoholic has, that his long period of sobriety and self-discipline had qualified him to drink as other men. Out came his carpet slippers and a bottle. In 2 months, he was in a hospital, puzzled and humiliated. He tried to regulate his drinking for a while, making several trips to the hospital meantime. Then, gathering all his forces, he attempted to stop altogether and found he could not. Every means of solving his problem, which money could buy, was at his disposal. Every attempt failed. Though a robust man at retirement, he went to pieces quickly and was dead within 4 years.
All right, so this is where our questions are going to start tonight. Keep going.
This case contains a powerful lesson. Most of us have believed that if we remained sober for a long stretch, we could thereafter drink normally. But here's a man who at 55 years found he was just where he had left off at 30. We have seen the truth demonstrated again and again. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. Commencing to drink after a period of sobriety, we are in a short time as bad as ever. If we are planning to stop drinking, there must be no reservation of any kind, nor any lurking notion that someday we will be immune to alcohol. Young people may be encouraged by this man's experience to think that they can stop as he did, on their own willpower. We doubt if many of them can do it, because none will really want to stop, and hardly one of them, because of the peculiar mental twist already acquired, will find he can win out. Several of our crowd, men of 30 or less, had been drinking only a few years, but they found themselves as helpless as those who had been drinking 20 years. To be gravely affected, one does not necessarily have to drink a long time nor take the quantities some of us have. This is particularly true of women. Potential female alcoholics often turn into the real thing and are gone beyond recall in a few years. Certain drinkers who would be greatly insulted if called alcoholics are astonished at their inability to stop. We, who are familiar with the symptoms, see large numbers of potential alcoholics among young people everywhere. but try and get them to see it. As we look back, we feel we had gone on drinking many years beyond the point where we could quit on our own willpower. If anyone questions whether he has entered this dangerous area, let him try leaving liquor alone for 1 year. If he is a real alcoholic and very far advanced, there is scant chance of success. In the early days of our drinking, we occasionally remained sober for a year or more, becoming serious drinkers again later. Though you may be able to stop for a considerable period, you may yet be a potential alcoholic. We think few, to whom this book will appeal, can stay dry anything like a year. Some will be drunk the day after making the resolutions, most of them within a few weeks. For those who are unable to drink moderately, the question is how to stop altogether. We are assuming, of course, that the reader desires to stop. Whether such a person can quit upon a non-spiritual basis depends upon the extent to which he has already lost the power to choose whether he will drink or not. Many of us felt that we had plenty of character. There was a tremendous urge to cease forever, yet we found it impossible. This is the baffling feature of alcoholism as we know it, this utter inability to leave it alone, no matter how great the necessity or the wish. How then shall we help our readers determine to their own satisfaction whether they are one of us? The experiment of quitting for a period of time will be helpful, but we think we can render an even greater service to alcoholic sufferers and perhaps to the medical fraternity. So we shall describe some of the mental states that precede a relapse into drinking, for obviously this is the crux of the problem. What sort of thinking dominates an alcoholic who repeats time after time the desperate experiment of the first drink? Friends who have reasoned with him after a spree, which has brought him to the point of divorce or bankruptcy, are mystified when he walks directly into a saloon. Why does he? Of what is he thinking? Our first example is a friend we shall call Jim. This man has a charming wife and family. He inherited a lucrative automobile agency. He had a commendable World War record. He is a good salesman. Everybody likes him. He's an intelligent man, normal so far as we can see, except for a nervous disposition. He did no drinking until he was 35. In a few years, he became so violent when intoxicated that he had to be committed. On leaving the asylum, he came into contact with us. We told him what we knew of alcoholism and the answer we had found. He made a beginning. His family was reassembled, and he began to work as a salesman for the business he had lost through drinking. All went well for a time, but he failed to enlarge his spiritual life. To his consternation, he found himself drunk half a dozen times in rapid succession. On each of these occasions, we worked with him, reviewing carefully what had happened. He agreed he was a real alcoholic and in a serious condition. He knew he faced another trip to the asylum if he kept on. Moreover, he would lose his family, for whom he had a deep affection.
All right, we'll go ahead and we'll start doing the questions. So if you want to flip back to page 33, the questions are going to start on the first full paragraph.
All right, are we ready?
Yeah.
Shelby, you ready?
The way this will work is they're going to do questions, and then Shelby will answer the question from a line out of the book. We're going to do a paragraph or two. After we do that, we'll open it up for any comments or conversation.
All right. Are there one or more lessons in this story?
This case contains a powerful lesson.
What do most of us believe that he also believed?
Most of us have believed that if we remained sober for a long stretch, we could thereafter drink normally.
What did he find when he started drinking again?
But here's a man who at 55 years found he was just where he had left off at 30.
What truth have we seen demonstrated repeatedly?
We have seen the truth demonstrated again and again. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic.
If we can manage to stay sober for a period, will it be better when we start again?
Commencing to drink after a period of sobriety, we are in a short time as bad as ever.
If we really want to stop drinking for good and all, what is a condition that must be met?
If we are planning to stop drinking, there must be no reservation of any kind, nor any lurking notion that someday we will be immune to alcohol.
And I have a comment from that paragraph that says, if you were able to stay sober for a spell, was it better or worse when you started drinking again? Next paragraph?
Yeah.
Are young people inclined to believe as he did when he was 30?
Young people may be encouraged by this man's experience to think that they can stop, as he did, on their own willpower.
All right, I have a three-part question. Will Will many of the young ones be successful in self-imposed sobriety? Will young folks really want to stop for good and all? And why will they be unable to stop even if they really want to?
We doubt if many of them can do it because none will really want to stop, and hardly one of them, because of the peculiar mental twist already acquired, will find he can win out.
What did several young men discover?
Several of our crowd, men of 30 or less, had been drinking only a few years, but they found themselves as helpless as those who had been drinking 20 years.
All right, so we'll go ahead and open up those two paragraphs if anybody has any
got a hand
comments. Talking to the fuzzy part.
Hi, recovered alcoholic. My chase, did we do? So the first paragraph of the two paragraphs is basically reminding me that alcoholism is a physical allergy. It is a biological condition that an alcoholic has once they start drinking. It triggers the phenomenon of craving and they can't stop drinking. Same with drugs. I don't know if I was about to do a couple bumps every night drinking it out. So we're just trying to remind us that it wasn't behaviors that caused them to drink. It wasn't behavior that was causing them to drink uncontrollably. It was that physical allergy that the body has. Going down to the next paragraph, it starts to talk about young people. You can be born with what we like to call an impaired pancreatic liver system. So when somebody starts drinking, and at a very early age, they experience the phenomenon of craving, that's because their pancreatic liver systems were impaired at birth. You can drink very heavily as a young adult or an adult and damage your pancreatic liver system to a point where it also can't metabolize alcohol. So you are born alcoholic, or you can drink yourself into alcoholism, but once you have turned alcoholic, just like a pickle can't go back to a cucumber, once my body is unable to metabolize alcohol like normal people, no matter how long I go without drinking, it will be unable to metabolize alcohol and I'll suffer from that phenomenal craving. Thanks.
Thanks, Mike Chase.
Anybody else want to share on those two paragraphs? No. We've got John.
It seemed to me, my name is John, recovered alcoholic.
Hey, John.
It seemed to me the last time that I drank, and many times before that, once I started, I couldn't put down. I could never go in and just have a few and say, I'm just coming home. I'm just going to stop for 1 or 2. It was never 1 or 2. I drank for effect. I drank to get loaded. I drank because I just wanted, I didn't want to do it. And once I started, it just goes back to remind me of what it's like when I start. And that's one event. That could be one scoop of ice cream, that could be a pan of plate of spaghetti. I mean, it doesn't stop. It's ice cream, it's spaghetti, it's drugs, it's alcohol. And that's the type of person I am. More.
Thanks, John. The part that really stands out to me in the first paragraph is if we were planning to stop drinking, there must be no reservation of any kind or any lurking notion that someday we'll be immune to alcohol. I know that when I went through this with my sponsor, there was no point where my sponsor looked at me and was like, oh, you're doing step one. Or, oh, you're doing step two. Like, those were kind of decisions that I had to come to on my own. And I have all of this reading that we do up until this point to try and get me to those decisions, And I really feel like what they're hitting home to me in that first paragraph is, am I done? Do I surrender? Am I willing to take my first step? Anybody else? All right, we'll go ahead and do the next paragraph.
All right, this is a two-part question. Does how long a person drinks have much to do with the helplessness of the disease, and does a person have to drink long and hard to become a hopeless alcoholic?
To be gravely affected, one does not necessarily have to drink a long time, nor take the quantities some of us have.
Does alcoholism treat women differently?
This is particularly true of women.
What can be said for potential female alcoholics?
Potential female alcoholics often turn into the real thing and are gone beyond recall in a few years.
What are certain drinkers astonished to learn?
Certain drinkers, who would be greatly insulted if called alcoholics, are astonished at their inability to stop.
What will those of us who are familiar with the symptoms of alcoholism see?
We who are familiar with the symptoms see large numbers of potential alcoholics among young people everywhere.
It says to skip the first sentence, but we don't do that here, so we're going to read it.
But try and get them to see it.
All right. You want to keep going?
Yeah, do another paragraph.
As we look back, what do we believe?
As we look back, we believe. As we look back, we feel we had gone on drinking many years beyond the point where we could quit on our own willpower.
What is the second test to learn the truth about alcoholism?
If anyone questions whether he has entered this dangerous area, let him try leaving liquor alone for 1 year.
Will real alcoholics be successful?
If he is a real alcoholic and very far advanced, there is scant chance of success.
Two-part question. Can we be successful in the early stages of the disease, and what happens to us later on?
In the early days of our drinking, we occasionally remain sober for a year or more, becoming serious drinkers again later.
Though a person is able to stop for a period, what may be the case?
Though you may be able to stop for a considerable period, you may yet be a potential alcoholic.
If a person fails the test, will he probably be interested in the content of this book?
We think few to whom this book will appeal can stay dry anything like a year.
Even though a real alcoholic may decide to quit for a year, how soon will most of them return to drinking?
Some will be drunk the day after making the resolutions.
All right. Oh, wait, sorry.
Oh, most of them within a few weeks.
All right. Mm-hmm. We'll open up those paragraphs for any comments. Did anybody ever make resolutions to stop drinking?
I made it 30 days.
Weren't you drinking non-alcoholic beer during this?
Yeah, and I was doing drugs also.
So this also counts, no drugs as well. Anybody want to share on their solemn oaths?
Hey,
Jacqueline.
I'm 31 now. When I was 24, I did stop drinking for a year. And I was able to do so. I went to meetings. You know, I was involved in the program. And I did drink immediately. The very at midnight of that year. But the thing that I did, that I didn't do in that time period of sobriety was I never found a sponsor. I never worked the steps, so I never ultimately did that first step of actually admitting that I was, you know, kind of a sober alcohol, and then my life had become unmanageable. And while I wasn't so, let's say, far advanced in that time period, you know, it does catch up pretty quick, and it did take a long time for me to come back to the rooms, but, you know, what they're saying here, at least for me, was very true. And for me, I need more than just being sober. I need to work a program, and I need to, you know, I need to do everything that the book tells me to do. There's certain words that the book, when the book says must, anytime I see a sentence where the book says must, I'm like, okay, I must do that. Like, that is a necessity for me to stay sober, because I've been there, and it's, I've done that year. And in reality, it's a joke. I mean, being sober, working towards something, or that spiritual nightmare, is, you know, in my opinion, kind of a waste. It was just sobriety, and I still felt kind of like zombie-ish. And thanks for sharing.
Tatiana.
Hey, Tatiana. Yeah.
Where it says, as we look back, we feel we have gone to keep many years beyond the point where we could quit on our willpower. Like, I really resonate with that, because, like, I have no problem telling people I could stop whenever. And I don't know how many years and years ago back it was when, like, my drinking got to the point that if I didn't drink that day, it's specifically only because a few reasons of me locking myself in my apartment, not talking to anybody, not going out anywhere, and telling myself every hour and hour not to drink. But, like, that was the only way that I would stay sober for a day or two, or maybe because I worked all day or something, and I'd be shocked that I wasn't doing that work, to be honest. So the amount of time that I drink like that, but I would have no problem telling people, you know, whenever something was coming up, like confronting me, I'd be like, well, I could stop if I want to. But that's just a huge lie, so that's a big sentence that I really, I don't know, just resonates with me a lot.
Thanks for sharing.
Thank you.
Hey, Don.
Hey, Don.
Hey, the sentence here, one does not necessarily have to have a long time or take quantities and set. Sure, I had a drinking problem, don't get me wrong, but what brought me to the rooms was my crack addiction. And I've been in the rooms about 2 years now, and I hear these stories, oh, I was on crack for 2 years, or I was homeless for 10 years, and this and that and the other. It took me 3 months to completely burn myself out. It took me 3 months to financially bankrupt myself. And at the urging of a good friend, I told me, you know, I should seek some help, which I voluntarily checked myself into a mental detox facility March 19, 2023. But like I said, it only took me 3 months. It took me 3 months to go from A to B, not, you know, long, not like, it didn't take me years. I was smart and not smart enough. I had a moment of clarity that if I continued, I would end up in the streets. I would be doing unspeakable things for drug money. I guess I have divine intervention, which brought me to this chair tonight, so you know, that sentence doesn't apply to me. It didn't take me very long.
Thanks, Don.
Thanks, Don.
Hey, Spencer. Bob.
Hey, Spencer.
Hey, Spencer.
You know, I think back to a lot of times where I tried some really, really silly methods to stop drinking, like, you know, drinking only beer, limiting the number of drinks, never drinking alone, never drinking in the morning, drinking only at home. Never having it in the house, never drinking during business hours, drinking only at parties, switching from shots of brandy, drinking only natural wines, agreeing to resign if ever drink on the job, not taking a trip, swearing off forever, with and without a solemn oath, taking more physical exercise, reading inspirational books, going to health farms and sanitariums, accepting voluntary commitment to asylums, and the list could go on ad infinitum. But for me, it wasn't until I tried the method that was described in this book that I was able to fully conceive in my innermost self that I was alcoholic and I need to find a solution.
Thanks, Ben.
Thanks, Spencer.
Hi, Alex, alcoholic.
Hey, Alex.
Excuse me. The last sentence here, some will be drunk the day after making resolutions, most of them within a few weeks. That one, I've only recently began admitting the fact that I'm an alcoholic, but I've been playing with the idea that I have the allergy to it that's alluded, that you alluded to earlier. I've, in the past, made promise resolutions to, hey, try to stop for a week, for a month, for 6 months. Sometimes I last 6 months, sometimes I last one day, and it's just that sentence really, like, I've tried to make those resolutions before, and sometimes it seemed like a success, but other times it was just a complete failure. So thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Alex.
For sharing.
How many people have bought a new car? Or bought a used car? You know, you walk out on the lot, and there's this goofy guy comes up to you, and kicks the tires, honks the horn, shows you the light switches, and you go, oh, right? And he finally says, you want to buy that car? I say, yeah. So they take you into the office, and then another guy shows up. This is the guy who's going to close the deal. This is the guy who finds out your finances, finds out your capabilities, and helps you to make that decision. So his job is to confirm that when you leave that lot, it's with the car he just sold you. And that's what more about alcoholism is a lot for alcoholism. We've learned a lot about alcoholism leading up to this point. But in this particular chapter, it's going to be reintroduced with a different character or a different situation. So that you finally are able to say to yourself, you know, this is me. I'm an alcoholic. Because my mom, when she gets or have what you used to get, like a prescription for antibiotics, she'd be all excited because, oh, I won't be drinking for, you know, 6 weeks. I'm going to save all this money because I'll be buying wine, or she's going to lose 10 pounds. I get a prescription for antibiotics, and I figure, well, how much can I really drink without not making the antibiotics? Yeah. So we, as an alcoholic, I am completely different than people who aren't. So if you're relating to this stuff and all the silly attempts you've done to try and control it, chances are you're an alcoholic. And it says right here, but you know, if you're not sure about it, maybe you're just not ready yet. So you want to, there's those two types of alcoholics. The ones that can see the writing on the road and say, definitely an alcoholic, going to be an alcoholic, I best stop now before I throw my whole life away. Or are you an alcoholic, you have to throw your whole life away to try and prove yourself that you're not an alcoholic, but you're going to be an alcoholic in the first place. So hopefully the book will help you find that without destroying your life.
Thank you. I'm Jay. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jay.
Yeah, so it says, to be gravely affected, one does not necessarily have to drink a long time or take the quantity some of us have. And I remember reading that also above there about the reservations and stuff. Like, when I came to AA, it was kind of like to make the judge happy. And then I figured, you know, I'm in this halfway. They need me to get a sponsor. I'm kind of like in this forced recovery space. But happily for me, you know, there was just enough in there that I was willing to give this a try. And I might have had some reservations, and then I read this, and then I was like, it made me stop and think, like, oh, maybe I shouldn't, you know? And then I always thought, like, maybe I shouldn't be in AA, you know? Like, how many people get sober at 25? And then I go to a young people's meeting, and they all got sober at 19, you know? And they're sharing their experiences with me, and then... You know, I'm just happy that I read this book, and I'm happy that I read it with a sponsor. And I like what you said about this being like the closing deal, you know, to are you an alcoholic? Do you want to continue with the work? But yeah, that's all I got.
Thanks, Jay. Anybody else have anything they want to share? No? All right, we'll jump into the next paragraph.
All right. What is... Hang on. If a person can't drink moderately, what is the question?
For those who are unable to drink moderately, the question is how to stop altogether.
What are we assuming?
We are assuming, of course, that the reader desires to stop.
What will determine whether or not a person can quit, for good and all, on a non-spiritual basis?
Whether such a person can quit upon a non-spiritual basis depends upon the extent to which he has already lost the power to choose whether he will drink or not.
What do many of us feel we have?
Many of us felt that we had plenty of character.
What was our tremendous urge?
There was a tremendous urge to cease forever.
How successful were we?
Yet we found it impossible.
Two-part question. What is the really baffling feature of chronic alcoholism and no matter what?
This is the baffling feature of alcoholism as we know it, the utter inability to leave it alone, no matter how great the necessity or the wish.
What is the question posed at this point?
How then shall we help our readers determine to their own satisfaction whether they are one of us?
What will be, two-part question, what will be helpful and do we think we can do better than that in helping the readers of this book determine if they are chronic alcoholics?
The experiment of quitting for a period of time will be helpful, but we think we can render an even greater service to alcoholic sufferers and perhaps to the medical fraternity.
Another two-parter. What will we describe and what... And why describe the mental condition?
So we shall describe some of the mental states that precede a relapse into drinking. For obviously this is the crux of the problem.
Just do one more.
All right. What is the question at this point?
What sort of thinking dominates an alcoholic who repeats time after time the desperate experiment of the first drink?
And then I have a comment here that says, refer to the first paragraph on page 30 for the answer. The idea that somehow, someday, ... he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. I know, a lot of BCIC. In what state are the alcoholic's friends and why? Rest of the paragraph.
Friends who have reasoned with him after a spree which has brought him to the point of divorce or bankruptcy are mystified when he walks directly into a saloon. Why does he? Of course. Of what is he thinking?
All right, so we'll go ahead and we'll open up those couple paragraphs for any comments. I like the part where they say, we're assuming, of course, that the reader desires to stop. I just think that's funny. Like, it's not like I picked up this book because it's part of, like, my summer reading plans. You know, I feel like if you're reading this book, obviously you desire to stop. You know someone who desires to stop. Where am I going?
Hey, Spencer.
Hey, Spencer.
Yeah, that's funny you say that, Ryan, because I was reading this book with zero desire to stop. I was doing this to, you know, appease the people around me, and the funny thing about this book is it has the ability to change your mind as you read it, especially if you read it with a sponsor, because, like, I remember sitting in my rehab and listening to people talk about this book and being like, what a waste of time. And thinking, like, who has time to read, things like that. So I had zero knowledge going into starting reading this book with a sponsor. I didn't even know I had a sponsor when my sponsor started reading it with me. And I kind of got fooled into sobriety, and I feel like that's the best way to do it, is to not try at all.
Thanks, Spence.
Hello, Mike Chase.
Hey, Mike Chase.
Up to this point in the book, they have specifically concentrated on that phenomenon of craving, the biological medical condition which causes us to drink. Once a person has 1, 2, 3, 4, how many drinks it takes for that phenomenon to kick in to get you convinced, are you that type of person? Do you have that allergic reaction? Because if you have that allergic reaction, then you're an alcoholic. I started drinking at age 6, started drinking alcoholically at age 9 and 10, which meant every time I drank to get shit-faced. I didn't intend to, I thought I chose to, but it always ended up happening. But I did not suffer from the phenomenon of craving yet. So I could go get really drunk on a Saturday or a Friday and go the whole week and not really think about it. But then it rolls around and out comes the booze, I have a couple. Phenomenon kicks in. Many years it was like that. It wasn't until I actually went to college where I triggered the phenomenon so many times that I got that physical mental obsession to finally kick in. What does that mental obsession mean? It means I know that I shouldn't drink tomorrow night or I shouldn't drink tonight because I got a final tomorrow. And then all of a sudden some silly loophole excuse comes up. I'll just have one drink. Knowing that one drink leads to like 14 drinks, I'm not going to show up anyways, but I just say that's going to be different tonight. So the problem here is, where am I? Is there are people who can go out once in a while and just get completely blotto and get on with their lives. We have these problem-heavy hard drinkers. They look like alcoholics. They drink occasionally, hard drinkers every so often. But they can decide not to drink today, not to drink this drink tomorrow. But am I the kind of drinker that I'm going to drink no matter what? I was good at stopping. I was the best. I could quit drinking so many times. My problem was I couldn't stop starting again, yeah. Which is what we're starting to touch into, this mental obsession. For those who aren't able to drink moderately, the question is how to stop altogether. This is probably one of the most amazing statements in the book. And when you're working with a new card, this is important. We are assuming, of course, that the reader desires to drink. If you don't want to drink, go out with your life. Go have fun. Do what you can do. We're for the people who want to quit drinking. So whether a person can quit on a non-spiritual basis, i.e. not through the steps, not through God, depends to the extent to which they've already lost the power to choose whether he will drink or not. So if you're a real alcoholic, this book's for you. And like with the Spencer here, he was able to diagnose himself as an alcoholic by reading the book. By the stuff in the book, not by things we hear in meetings. Like, I'm an alcoholic because I lost my car. Well, I lost 4 cars. Or I'm an alcoholic because I've had 3 divorces. No divorces. I'm an alcoholic because my house got taken away. My house wasn't taken away. I'm an alcoholic because you had a DWI. Well, that was back in the 80s. That was really bad weather when the cop was out to get you. You know, always have this thing. But when I start drinking, do I know how much I'm going to drink that night? Maybe once in a while I could. My mother always knew how much she was going to drink. She got her accidentally said, oh, I have 50 drinks tonight. that shit never happened with her. I'm just glad that somebody took the time to sit down and read the book with me, too. Because if I had to sit and read the book by myself without somebody walking me through it, I would make up all types of excuses why this isn't me. But when I'm working with somebody, it allowed me to find out that I'm a real alcoholic.
Thanks, Mike Chase. Got a hand over here.
My name is Zach. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Zach.
I like the line where it says, whether such a person can quit upon a non-spiritual basis depends upon the extent to which he has already lost the power to choose whether he will drink or not. And this whole, like, willpower versus, you know, God reliance thing. Like, when I'm stuck on willpower, I'm resisting it. And, like, the pain is in the resistance always for me. Like, if I'm resisting it, that means I'm still thinking about it. And I'm white-knuckling it, thinking about it all day, and I'm just blocking it out somehow, trying not to get bored, stuff like that. But, you know, when I came to AA and got a sponsor and started working the steps, and my first spiritual experience was really when I actually read this book, sober spiritual experience when I read this book. Because it educated me about, you know, myself and the disease and stuff like that. But when I started working the steps, and kind of replacing that resistance with reliance upon higher power, prayer, meditation, things like that. And, like, the spiritual principles of, like, acceptance and surrender are, like, precursors to my spiritual condition. You know, like, once I accept that I'm an alcoholic and surrender, then I can begin to, like, actually build some sort of spirituality for myself. But, yeah, like, I think they talk about that in the Bible, too, that, like, resist not evil, you know. Like, if I'm resisting something, that means I'm still fighting it. Trying to defeat it, I'm trying to win somehow, I'm thinking about it all day, I can't defeat the disease. That's all I got. Thank you.
Thanks
for sharing.
I'm an alcoholic. My name is Shelby.
Hi, Shelby.
Hi. Real quick, I just want to, I laugh at, many of us felt that we had plenty of character. I never felt that until I got sober and really worked my steps. And I say that because on the side here of the book I'm reading, it says, have you crossed the line, with that entire paragraph? Like, kind of like highlighted. And from my very first drink, I crossed the line. I was alcoholic the very first drink and sip I ever took, and I drank alcoholically until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. That is all I knew to do, and that is the only way I knew how to drink, have fun, fit in, shut off my brain, be a part of XYZ. A drink needed to be there amongst many other drinks, or else what was the point of one drink? And the tremendous urge to cease forever was not there. I thought that this way of life was my way of life, and that I would stay this way forever. And unfortunately, I will never die, because there's a story in the back. You know, it talks about how this person, like, wasn't afraid of death; they were afraid of staying alive. That was my condition, my entire existence, and till I found AA. And then, this baffling feature of alcoholism, as we know it, the utter inability to leave it alone, no matter how great the necessity or the wish. I was one of those alcoholics that, too, got some bad weather and constantly got arrested and constantly, like, just pain to the, like, core. Like, such a bad fucking alcoholic. And I used to think I just had, like, a tremendous bad luck, but no matter what, did not think I could stop drinking to stop those conditions. That was... not, I knew, like, I had a problem drinking from the very first drink, and also everyone told me my entire life. But, like, no matter how great the necessity to stop was there, because I didn't want to keep getting arrested in trouble and giving all my money away and never being, like, happy and joyous, I couldn't, and I didn't even know how if I wanted to. And I had to share that because on the next page, when it talks about relapse, why does he, of what is he thinking? I got sober young, relapsed young, got sober again young. And I always was asked before I came to AA by my parents specifically, my father would always say, why'd you do it, man? And I'd be like, I don't know. And, like, I don't know was this, like, theme of my life. And he used to get mad at me, right? He'd be like, you can't say I don't know anymore. And I had nothing else to offer him. There was genuinely no idea. And that's how I drank the rest of my drinking career, with the I don't know what I'm thinking, I just know I have to do this. So when I relapsed, it was kind of the same thing, although my brain tricked itself into thinking something else was okay. But, yeah, I just had to share that. I didn't have character. I didn't even think I had plenty of character. I had to learn that here, so thank you.
Thanks, Shelby.
Thanks for sharing.
My name is John from Gilbert Alcoholic.
Hey, John.
The only thing I wanted to say is, you know, I could stop. It's great at stopping. I couldn't say stop. You know, I stopped for 2 weeks and the urge would come. And I would hit the door, I would come back 3 days later. You know, I'd go on and run. And I knew what it was going to do to me before I did it, but I just couldn't stay stopped. I couldn't say no. I couldn't resist. The only way I learned to stay stopped was by coming into Alcoholics Anonymous after going through a detox and getting a sponsor and having a sponsor take me through sex. And somehow that obsession, that urge for me to want to go out and use that. But we'll get into that more as we go on down the book. I just couldn't stay stopped. Once I started, I couldn't stop. And after stopping, I couldn't stay stopped. Double-edged sword.
Thanks, John. Hello.
Hey.
Both you and Shelby said about like not being able to stay stopped. That's kind of where I'm at right now. I'm in this place where I know I need to lean on my faith. I know I need to lean on my community. I'm doing that, but the obsessive thoughts are still there, and they are so obsessive, and they are so strong. And the fact that I have command hallucinations telling me to act on my addiction, which is self-harm, does not help. I feel kind of out of place at these meetings sometimes because my addiction is not a substance. It's an action, but your brain chemicals get messed up all the same. I just wanted to say thank you, everyone, for sharing, because it helps me feel less out of place when I relate to y'all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, Spencer. Unmute him.
Oh, talking about
hello. You know, all this talk about starting and not being able to start, stop starting things. It brings me back to page 24, which states that the fact is most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice and drinking. Our so-called willpower becomes non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. That's definitely a hopeless place to be. But the good news is that we have a book here that describes in detail how to get out of that fact and that state of mind. And for that, I'm grateful. Thanks, Spencer.
Thank you.
All right. Anybody else have anything they want to share?
Going once.
Oh, go. Absolutely.
Tatiana Alcoholic.
Hey, Tatiana.
I kind of started to think about when you said you thought we had a lot of character.
Yeah.
I too don't think I had a lot of character. But maybe it wasn't character, and I don't know if it's the right word, but I definitely had a huge ego. That's what kept me going. Was like, well, because it's not my first time getting sober. Tried to get sober about 3 years ago. It's foggy, but... you know, but I did the detox, and then from detox, I did a halfway, and I was there for, I think I was sober for just under 10 months. But I knew this time around when I was going to detox, like, I knew if I did, I know what was coming, right? Like, I was like, all right, I'm going to go to detox, and if I go, I'm probably going to do PHP, and I'm probably going to do this, and I'm probably going to end up at another halfway, and I'm probably going to do this. It's, like, a huge commitment, right? It's like one of the things I didn't want to do again, and you know, probably not drive my car. I mean, like, I don't have my car now anyway, so it's like win-win. But it was a huge ego thing. It's like, I don't want to do it again, and I just knew what I was walking into, which at the same time, this came around, like, made it also easier because I knew what I was coming into. And detox wasn't as, you know, scary. Going to PHP was not as frightening, but like, I think that's what I was fighting, was just like, well, we can't do this again. Like, I got to figure out something on my own, which, I don't know, was just pretty insane because I was definitely I mean, it's not a good spot for the whole time I was drinking, but the last couple months were definitely... So it's funny because, like, our brain, it's like a... We're really good forgetters, I guess. You know what I mean? We forget what we've been through and we forget what we've done. Like, the last time... The first time I got sober, how sick I was before I literally begged somebody to take me to the hospital was just as bad, or maybe a little bit not as bad as this time around. I begged my sister to come get me to take me to detox, which is, like, unheard of, but... like an unheard of thing for me to do is call my sister. So I don't know, it's just like really good at forgetting how bad it was. But so I was like fighting that I wasn't doing that again, you know what I mean? But I did, but I'm happy I'm here now. That's all I got.
Thanks for sharing. Thank you. Anybody else have anything? Alright, we're going to go ahead and start wrapping up.
From A Vision for You, page 164. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but you obviously cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and for countless others. This is a great fact for us.
Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny.
All right, so in this meeting, we like to celebrate sponsorship. So we don't do poker chips, but we do sponsorship medallions. So if you are a group member sponsor and you have a new sponsee and you want to introduce them to the group with a sponsorship medallion, now's a good time to do so. All right, bring two next week.
Yes. Does anybody need a sponsor? No. If you're too shy, just come stand awkwardly up here after the meeting and someone will come talk to you.
If you'd like to become a member of this group, please join us after the meeting to fill out a membership card.
Can all home group members raise your hand? Mm. That was a trick. We'll see you after the meeting to help take down the room.
Thank you for joining us tonight. Hope to see you next week. Also, Thursday evening is our Alcoholics and God Step Series workshop starting at 7:15 up here. I have a hand? What? Oh, it's his fourth session, Tom M.?
Sam.
Tom M. will be doing his fourth session.
Awesome. Please wait till you're 75 feet away from the doors to vape or smoke, or you can use the balcony if you're emotionally stable. We're going to go ahead and close with the Lord's Prayer. Who woke us up today? Our Father.
Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever.
Thirsty bodies aching. I am desperately in need of restoration. Yeah, and I am ready for you to take me higher. Yeah, the only thing that I can do is. I'm praying, 'cause on my own I just can't get it right. It doesn't matter how hard I try, but with you I become a much stronger man. Getting on my knees puts me back on my feet again. Load is heavy, too much to keep. These possessions that I have amount to nothing at all. And I am willing to hand over every one of them. 'Cause they won't profit me anything. Can't get it right. can't get it right. It doesn't matter how hard I try, but with you I become a much stronger man. Getting on my knees puts me back on my feet again. On my own, I just can't get it right. It doesn't matter how hard I try, but with you I become a much stronger man. And oh, when you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you, baby. Yes, when you're laughing. When you're laughing, yes, the sun comes shining through. But when you're crying, you bring on the rain. Stop your sighing, baby, and be happy again. Yes, and keep on smiling. Keep on smiling, baby. And I hope we'll be right back.
This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine. Everywhere I go, I'm gonna let it shine. Everywhere I go, I'm gonna let it shine. Everywhere I go, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine.
Chase, here's that song you've been asking me for a million years. I finally pulled it out the corners of my mind, and here you go. Fog is lifted, I see the light. Count my blessings when I go to sleep at night, and I dream now. Fear has left me, and I'm standing tall. A pile of bricks now lies where once there stood a wall that I hid behind. For all this time. Sometimes it takes a burning bush or a great white light to set you right. Well, my eyes don't cry now, and I'm out to dry. Pity party's over, the guest of honor has arrived, and he's almost up. For the first time in my life, are green now, growing vines. They twist and turn each way, flowers blooming all the time outside my door. Like never before, I had to change everything to realize that today is the best day of my life. This broken man, I travel far and wide through the great divide, through his own heart, yeah. Well, I have a life today when it give away, and it's just about to start. Tuesday in a brand new way. Show up and plug in my guitar, and I play my songs, and people sing along and stomp their feet and raise their arms. And here in this moment that we share, nothing could come up. Song is. God bless. I love you, Mike Chase. Bye.
I think you know this one, don't you?
tape. Got one man that just won't set me free. Now clap your hands and believe me, children.
Thank you very much.